If you've got any ideas for future webinars, any topics that you'd like us to raise or look for somebody to do a presentation or a section on, then please do drop us a note and we're more than happy to either invite yourself to have a slot or we'll look for somebody to discuss that topic. So we're going to get started because part of the plan is this keeping this format really tight, try and keep it within an hour. I know we went over the hour last time, but I think the debate was worthwhile. And we're going to go first up. We're very pleased to welcome the first presentation, which is from Andy Shields. Welcome, Andy, from Global Business Unit Director at Indicator. Get that right? Indicator. Is it Indicator? Is that right? Yeah, me and Curtis.
Indicator.
We did question it when we did it on the podcast the other week. So.
No worries.
Curtis normally leaves the hard ones for me to say. I don't know why, because I'm the worst one at saying things. But anyway, so you're going to cover up some of the latest data around the coronavirus and affecting the used car market, particularly in the UK and the European market, and looking at a range of the possible future contingency actions for Pacific, the automotive sector, I believe, Andy. So yeah. Could I ask you if any questions at the end, so please, you know, save them to the end and we'll hand over to Andy.
Fine. Just so I know, what time frame do I have in terms of presenting? I was just told come and chat, so I'm happy to talk for an hour if you want. It's not a problem.
About 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes should be fine, Andy, if you can.
Okay, 20 minutes. In which case, I'll probably go for a little bit less, and then allow some questions time.
Okay,
perfect. So I mean, basically, little introduction to Indicator. Who are we? We're part of the Autorola Group. Autorola Group operates electronic auctions in 22 countries worldwide. We have three divisions. We have the auction side, marketplace. We have a solutions division that allows large fleets to manage the process of defleet and the process of handling vehicles, as well as dealers, large dealer groups to handle vehicles overall, and they produce IT solutions for that. And then the final division is the Indicator division, which I run. We operate in 13 countries across Europe and Turkey. What we do is we analyze the internet. We take about 9 million off the internet every single day. We bring in all the information about those vehicles. We then analyze that data to look at pricing, market trends. We go through a lot of AI activity to understand what's happening in the market in terms of pricing, but also verifying that the vehicle that we're looking at is the right vehicle through imaging technology and that sort of thing. What we then do is we bring that data back and we can then provide out to leasing companies, rental companies, dealer groups, analysis in terms of what's happening in the marketplace overall. So that's basically who we are and what we do. We announced, we produced about 3 weeks ago a white paper, and that was really the start point of for us the thought process of what might be happening in the marketplace. And what we did was we looked at a number of things. Firstly, we looked at what happened in 2008, 2009 in terms of the recession. We then started looking at the way the virus was spreading, and then we started building some scenarios thereafter. Subsequently, what we're now doing is releasing on a regular basis to all our customers information about what the market is doing and how it's progressing to really verify what we said in the white paper. So what I'll do is I'll give you a quick run through of the white paper itself, the thought processes we went through. And then what I'll do is I'll share some data from our systems, which shows what's happening across the rest of Europe. And from that, hopefully we'll be able to get some guidance about what may or may not happen in the UK marketplace as we go through a transition of complete lockdown. And interestingly, the UK is the most locked down of countries in Europe. And as we go from that transition into what do we think the timing might be, and looking at other countries, what is the progression of pricing lessons for what might happen in the UK? So that's what I'll take you through overall. So if I look at the white paper, I think the interesting thing that came from it first was looking historically back. What we found was that if you take the UK market in the last recession, there was actually on the new car market side, there was only about, on the used car market side, there was only about a 6% reduction in total volumes, whereas the new car market was significantly greater affected. And actually, if you look across the whole of Europe, because whilst we think we're out of Europe, we're not quite out of Europe, and the dynamics of manufacturers and their production and their needs to shift in also still impacts the UK. What was interesting was across the whole of Europe, that marketplace from a used car perspective only dropped down by 10%, but then recovered by 2013. Whereas if you look at the new car market across Europe, it dropped down by 80% by 2009, dropped down to 80% by 2009, and then dropped significantly further down to about 70% by 2013. What did that say? Well, that said that actually the new car market is very much a demand-driven market. It was driven by the fact that GDP collapsed, Italy went through its sovereign debt crisis, etc., etc. Whereas the used car market is a much more resilient market across Europe in all countries. Effectively, the used car market is more a supply-side driven marketplace. And effectively, it is the pressure of vehicles that get defleeted on a regular basis by the likes of the leasing companies, the rental companies, etc. Effectively, that produces a constant stream. The variable factor is price. And as a lot of us who went through the last situation in 2008, that's where we saw, whilst the volumes were relatively constant, there was a backlog that was there. The supply-demand curve went completely out of kilter and prices dropped significantly. So the question is, how does that then move forward? Is that going to be the same scenario that we have going forward for this situation? And a lot of people are talking about maybe a sharp V shape in terms of residual values. Or are we entering into a place where the world is different and this recession is going to be markedly different from the others? Within the white paper, we explored three scenarios. The first scenario, and if I go back to the point when we were writing the white paper, it was just at the end of the period that the government was talking about the concept of herd immunity, and that actually they were not necessarily putting the restrictions on too tightly, so that effectively they brought forward the amount of infection, that they got an earlier peak, because their biggest fear was if they left it for a longer period of time, they'd end up pushing the whole peak back into the winter months when the NHS would be less capable of coping. So that was a theory that was just beginning to die at that point when we wrote it. But that was the best case scenario. That was a scenario where we'd have a short, sharp shock to the industry, and then things would get better, everybody good, and we'd go into the winter in a great place. And that was our best case scenario. Once we looked at our mid-case scenario, we looked at a different environment. We looked at the thought process that said, well, actually, these restrictions are going to last for a significant period of time. The amount of people who need to get infected to get to herd immunity is quite large. You need to get about 600,000 out of a million people in the country, about 60% need to get infected to the point that you can then pull back restrictions 100%. And you can say that the natural immunity of the herd of the country will allow things to move forward. So if we look at that, it's effectively 600,000 people out of a million. We then looked at what the infection rates were and how they were progressing. And just to put in perspective as to where we are even today in terms of the infection rates, if you look at Italy, which is now beginning to get its infection rates under control, they're reporting that there are 2,000 people per million compared to the 600,000 we need to get to for herd immunity. The UK, they're at 1,000 people per million. So actually, we've got a huge way to go. even China, where people are saying, oh, look, China, it's coming out, it's great, the market's coming back. And I saw various documents the other day, Automotive Management China, were talking about the fact that the easing of the restrictions now meant that business in China was coming back to about, you know, showroom traffic was about 60% of the norm. That's fine. But if you actually look at the infection rate of China, the published ones at least, they're only at 50 people per million who are infected. It's probably more, but it's not going to be significantly more than that which has gone through within Italy. So China, despite the fact that it looks like it's, oh, easing the restrictions and the market's going to come back, they are also going to be in a restricted position for a very long period of time. In fact, our scenario is basically saying that until we get to herd immunity or we get a vaccine in, we are going to be in a large amount of restrictions for an extended period of time, probably 18 months. If that's the case, then we're looking at a very different curve to what we had last time in terms of the marketplace. If we're looking at this curve, what we're looking at is probably, when things switch on, quite a sharp drop down because of the supply-demand imbalance. But from our point of view, we don't necessarily see a scenario where there is that rapid jump back up, because we're going to have an underlying issue, both in terms of restriction and, more importantly, in terms of the economy going forward. Because the economy is under huge pain. You look at the companies we all work for at the moment, the lack of revenue that's coming through in a number of cases. Yes, we've saved some money in terms of some manpower by furloughing a few people, but the reality is there's a lot of pain that's being built up within the economy at the moment. And if we go for an extended period of time, an 18-month level of restriction, we could be in a lot of trouble. The third scenario is probably the kind of real nightmare. And that scenario is one where actually, if we look at countries like Italy, we look at Greece, we look at Spain, and we look at the amount of debt that they currently carry. They entered into the last recession with about 60% of GDP to debt. They're now exited from there at 120%, and now their economies are on complete shutdown. And just as we are, there's huge government bailouts that are going on. This is going to increase national debt into a very significant position. Reality, can these countries really survive that again? And will Germany come along and bail them out? Overlay on that, the old adage, when America catches a cold, when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold. Well, America is coughing, it's got temperature, it's got corona. The rest of us are going to suffer, as has China. So the worst case scenario is actually we go back into a real cycle of economic downturn. Now, if you take where I think we're at the moment, for me, I'm forecasting in and around the midpoint scenario. I think governments will help out. I think there is going to be a lot of collateral damage, particularly in the third world. But overall, we're at that midpoint. We definitely don't perceive that there is going to be a short, sharp shock. Come September, everything's good, restrictions lifted, RVs will jump like crazy, and the world will be good. So that's basically the overlay of what we see the white paper said, and our thought processes on how we go forward in terms of volumes and residual values. Now, what I'm going to do is I'll now share with you some of the views of countries across Europe, and this is where I hope my technical skills will allow me to get into a place where I can show you some data. So let me go here. Okay, are you able to see my screen at the moment? There should be a graph in front of you that says incoming cars.
Yep, we can see that.
Yeah. Yes, thanks, Andy.
Okay, let's move that over there. So this is Indicator Market Watch. It's an interactive tool that allows you to have a look at the volumes and prices that are happening in the 13 countries where we operate in, including the UK. The first graph that I'm showing you here, just to give you a flavour of what it looks like, is incoming cars. So what we do by looking at the internet, we look at both what the total amount of advertisements that are on the internet or with dealers, etc. We look at the number of cars that have come in on a particular day, and we look at the number of cars or adverts that have gone out. And effectively, coming in is an approximator of purchases, and going out is effectively an approximator of sales. And if we weight the numbers and look at them across the true industry numbers that are published by SMMT, et cetera, then there is a really close correlation. So we're very comfortable that this, as an overall trend indicator of the marketplace, is good. So what I'm doing here is I'm showing you the incoming cars for Italy, and effectively you've got the jump up and down, which is the daily position in terms of incoming, and the line down the middle is showing effectively a 7-day rolling average, so we smooth the data out. We run the data set here from the 1st of February through to the end of March, and so what you can basically see is the progression of Italy, and then effectively their lockdown happening, and overall a drop down in the total numbers that are going there. So that's our incoming, and basically I can zoom in and I can have a look at any country I like. So if I wanted to have a look at Germany, I can just, hold on, this is where, because I've been sat inactive, I need to refresh. So bear with me a second. So I can have a look at Germany, and you can see Germany is on a slightly more constant basis. That's interesting. That's incoming vehicles. That's probably going to be more interesting a bit later on. What I'm going to do now is a look at sales. And if I get to here so I can do a comparison of countries, let me first go through and just bear with me a second. Pull that over. So first thing I'm going to do is have a look through what I call the lockdown countries. So I'm going to look at France, Spain, and Italy, so you can see the progression that we've got there. So here we've got at the top, the largest one is France. Next one down is Italy, and then the bottom one is Spain. So just showing the relative size of the market. You can also see the timing of the lockdown that happened, where it's Italy and Spain were relatively early. Macron was a bit late in what he did, but when he implemented it, they were hard and fast. And you can see this huge drop down to virtually a zero position. Now, it's interesting, in those marketplaces, they're not as locked down as we are. So whilst retail activity is stopped, there is some underlying trade activity. So if we look at Italy at the moment, we're still at about, our auction division has dropped down by about 75%, but there's still an underlying 25% of business where dealers are actually buying cars in anticipation of the market opening up, because they are 15% cheaper, 20% cheaper than they are currently. The other areas, if I then look at different countries, so let's say I bring in a situation where I look at Netherlands, and let's bring in Sweden and Turkey. These are interesting countries, because whilst the lockdown countries have dropped down quite significantly, these countries haven't, because the nature of the restrictions that they've got are far, far less. However, we're still seeing in Netherlands a drop-off an index of about 60%. Turkey, similar, drop-off to about 60%. Interestingly, the country that is least affected in Europe is Sweden, and some of you may have already seen in Sweden the fact that there is a big debate going on, because they're continuing to follow the very light touch herd immunity principle overall, and you only see a 20% drop of volumes in the Swedish market. Let's have a look at price then, in terms of what's happening in price in the marketplace. So what we've done here is we've got the basic index of 100% for February, the first, and then we have a progression along, and I've opened up with Austria. Now, if I go into, let's say, take Netherlands as a marketplace first, which is one that was on about 60% of the marketplace, we see actually quite a small drop in the pricing in the marketplace. So that's only dropped by about 1.4% since February. Now, interestingly, if I then look in at diesel within that, it's quite stronger. That's a 3% drop off in diesel. So there is a variation between the different fuel types. Again, I can drill into segment if I need to. To be fair, there's not significant information interest in segments at the moment, but we will see some differentials coming. So that's Netherlands. The other big country, the other country which was remaining relatively strong was Turkey. I'll show this so you can get a view. That's what the Turkish market is doing. It's a really interesting market. So since the beginning of the year, the Turkish market used car prices have increased by about 9%. It's about 1% behind where we'd see it being. But at the end of the day, this is a market of hyperinflation, collapsed currency, no new cars being imported into it. And so actually the marketplace is jumping into, or has been jumping into, buying used cars as a safe haven asset. Because the lira in your pocket is not something that you want. It's interesting how relevant it is. We're beginning to see a little bit of a drop off. It's a sign of a market that actually has been becoming a bubble. There's been a shortage of stock and a lot of people have bought it, a huge amount of inflation. Now, interestingly, the UK as a market has had a shortage of stock and prices for a long period of time have been growing, not quite at the Turkish levels by any stretch. But it does say there's a risk that we have a bubble in the marketplace. So any movement in prices in Turkey, any movement in prices in the UK is clearly a sign that we might have problems. If I bring in just looking at the UK, actually what we find the UK doing at the moment is very, very stable. Now, why is that? Why is the UK stable? Well, effectively, it stopped from its growth position to start off with. But equally, the way that the changes came in the UK really stopped dealers from taking any actions. They went through, dealers I've spoken to, I talked to one dealer group, they'd done a promotion, they'd done one of their best promotions going. They had sold more cars than they ever thought they would do. And this was at the midpoint in February. And then all of a sudden it went bad. Boris Johnson announced the lockdown. Everybody went into furloughing and nobody even got their head around, let's reprice all our stock whilst we are in a shutdown scenario. And so from that point of view, effectively, the UK dealers haven't reacted. Now, if I compare the situation across Europe in terms of how dealer and trade prices have moved, I think it's interesting that our Italian prices actually have dropped down by about, we've got about 25% residual trade in Italy, but the pricing is down by about 15%. In the Dutch market, we're actually, from a trade point of view, we're running about flat, and we're seeing prices from a trade point of view only down about 5 to 6%. Denmark is around about 10%. With Spain, Italy and Belgium, their pricing is down about 20%. So you see quite a range. But the impact of trade pricing coming down much more rapidly than retail pricing is something that we're going to see, I think, across the UK as and when we do open up. And so we will see that hard drop down in trade prices. The question is, for how long and for how fast that will happen? I think I've probably over-talked my welcome. So at that point, I shall cease and allow some questions if I can work out how to stop sharing screens.
No, it's fantastic, Andy. Very, very insightful. And as you say, you can probably go for an hour or more on this, couldn't we, to be fair. So I think we have got some questions. Have we, Sanjay? So we've got an analysis seems very scientific in terms of when lockdown would or should be removed. Do you think the political pressure will mean that it is relaxed much earlier, or that we see a series of off-on lockdowns until there is a vaccine. And that's probably looking at the sort of the W recovery rather than the L or the U in terms of the hypotheses of recovery. Yeah. But what's your thoughts on that?
Whether it's a W, I think it's more going to be a ziggy-zaggy the whole way. I think the government the government had a volt face. Effectively, they were going down the herd immunity and suddenly realised that 200,000 people dying wasn't very good for re-election. I think, yes, they're going to get a lot of pressure, but they're not so stupid as to think that, well, no, let's relax it. It's all going to be good. It's all going to be great. Because the moment that a lot of people dying happens, the public and the press will go from "you should be opening up" to "what a stupid decision, why did you listen to us?" So I actually see that the government will take a cautious piece. I think the key element is how quickly the government can ramp up the critical care beds. We entered into the critical care beds at a position where we were around about 4,000 critical care beds. The idea is to ramp it up to 30, 40,000. We're currently at a place where we're about 12, 15,000. But if we take that, that basically, if you think about the number of people who get ill, the number of people who then need hospitalization, which is quite high, it's about 20%, it basically says that effectively the level of infection rate we have at the moment of about 4,000 people a month, and it's dropped down a little bit, but 4,000 people newly infected a day, effectively that will have to continue at this level. We won't be able to maybe move it up to 8,000, 12,000 for a period of time. And that to me suggests that we will be in an 18-month period unless we get into a situation where there's some sort of vaccine, or we get into a situation where there is a significant amount of testing of those people who are deemed to be, they've had the virus and therefore can move around. So if you look at what's happening in Wuhan at the moment, they have released the lockdown, but actually you have a specific card or certificate on your mobile phone that says, "I've been tested clean." And if I've been tested clean means you can move around. If you don't have I've been tested clean, you stay in your house and you don't go anywhere at all, not even for shopping. So I think we're going to be at an underlying piece for quite a long period of time. And that's why we, as from Indicata's point of view, believe in this long U-shape or double dotting up and down the whole way through. Nope, can't hear you.
Probably help if I take myself off mute. How many people have done that in recent weeks? But anyway, bringing that back to the sector in terms of the new and used car market. So the SMMT have come out this week with a revised forecast of 23% down for 2020 of 1.7 million. There's obviously pent up volume sat there from mid-March. We've got leasing rental sector with products sat around. You know, you've got manufacturers that brought vehicles into the UK during the Brexit period. What's your view of the new and used market for the end of the year, going over towards the end of the year? Because obviously there's a lot of activity trying to take place. We've got dealers that are taking deposits through their online propositions. There's a lot of pressure coming from rental leasing companies to get vehicles moving. What's your take on that for the rest of the year?
I think from on that front, I think we'll see something relatively similar, if not even more aggressive, as we saw in the last recession. In the last recession, things turned bad. Demand went away. But the OEMs were still in a position whereby they could build cars and did. They started slowing production lines down, but they were still in a position where they could build cars. If you look at European production of vehicles, basically about 1.2 million worth of production has been taken out of the equation, but purely by complete shutdown of factories, which is about 50% capacity. is in a shutdown situation. So whilst you might we might look at there is a backlog, there is this, there is that, and that whole piece machinery is just grinding to a halt overall. So I think what we will see is actually quite a significant drop down in the new car piece supply as we go through. But equally, does that mean that it's going to be swapped into used cars? I'm nervous about that on the basis of where I see the other side of the equation, which is the economy, the continuing lockdown over a period of time, people getting more and more frustrated with being stuck at home, businesses starting to get much more pressure. This belief that we can effectively say to a company, we'll pay your 25% of your or 50% of your salary bill and the world will be good. That's no good if you're sat there with effectively you've lost 50% of your revenue and you're only getting 10% back from the recovery in salary bill. You're still in a negative situation. So there's going to be a lot of businesses getting into a lot of pain. Again, are they all going to go into debt? No, they're not going to go into debt. You're going to find that a lot of companies will start making redundancies and therefore the economy. So we'll go from a furloughing situation to a, God, I can't keep my business running. I'm going to have to actually make some intrinsic changes in the size of my business. And therefore, economically, I think towards the back end of the year, we will still be quite weak. And therefore, do I see a used car recovery because there's a gap from the new car and there is still some pent-up demand to happen? I'm bearish on that front. I know a lot of people disagree with me, but I'm bearish on that front.
Okay. And just one final question. Keith Weaver's asked, if somebody has obviously been tested clean, but can still carry on and spread the virus? Does having a test say that you're clean, going back out again and doing normal business, is that risky or...?
In terms of that, as a test, I'm not a doctor. I mean, at the moment, we don't have a test anyway that confirms that whether somebody's had the virus or not. And that one still seems to be, at the last I was reading, up to 6 months away. So effectively, that gives you the kind of, China is allowing people out based on the fact that they've done massive amounts of upfront testing. They may not have released the results, but they've done massive amounts of testing. So they're still in this kind of very early mitigation stage of being able to track individual people who've got it and isolate them. We're not going to be in that situation. Plus that scenario of a, let's see who's had it at the current levels. We're still, like I said, we're at 1,000 people per million who've got it. Even in 6 months' time, if we look at the current rate, we might be at 20,000, 30,000 people per million. We need to be at 600,000 per million to be in herd immunity states. So I'm not totally convinced of that.
No problem. Just
a final one from me, just as a small plug. The Indicator tool that I showed there, that is available free of charge for any leasing company, rental company, or OEM who would like to have access to it. We're quite happy to have a conversation. Sorry, plug over.
Fantastic. I mean, it's useful, very useful. So I think we'll move on for the minute. And I know we've got Kay Hudson on from the US, from Cap Auto Recon. So maybe we'll move on to the next presenter and then maybe we'll sort of try and grab a bit of time off Kay just to give us sort of a US view on what's happening over there. So we'll move on to the next presenter. And so we're moving on to Nigel Morris, who is the tax director at MHA McIntyre Hudson, and just going to give us a quick update on the latest qualification criteria for employers to retain the new government grants, including a practical advice on administrating the payroll and the HMRC reclaim process. So over to you, Nigel. If he's on. Steve, is Nigel on?
Nigel's definitely on, yeah.
Hi, Nigel. I think you're there now.
Sorry. Yes, so thanks very much. I'll keep this brief. Steve is today from last time.
Nigel, you're going to have to dial off and dial back in. You're a Dalek.
Yeah, you.
And I'll tell you what we could do, Philip. We could start off with John Beveridge talking about property and the claims along property. And then if Nigel dials off and dials back in.
Can we do that then, Nigel? We'll move on to John. So John's the managing director from Magellan 2000. So over to you, John, if you're there.
Yeah, thank you. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, good. Good morning, everybody. I'll just, part of the McIntyre Hudson auto team in terms of looking at all these specific issues at the moment, just talk briefly about a couple of things, give you an update on property, and then I just want to spend a couple of minutes talking about cash flow, which obviously is of utmost importance. In terms of property, many dealers, rental companies, used car dealers, etc., have now talked to their landlords, but there does seem to be a number of communication issues there which need ironing out in terms of obviously that flow of information between one and the other. The key things there regarding rented property, leasehold property, as we've talked before, is starting to think now very clearly in terms of the next quarter, how you are going to obviously try and not have to pay the full rent for the next quarter. And from what we've just heard, you know, this is likely to carry on one way or another for quite some time. Now, there are really three options on that, either a deferment of the rent, so effectively from a cash flow point of view, that's the best. Secondly, maybe for smaller landlords, you might agree to pay on a monthly basis. And thirdly, maybe trying to get into some negotiation of a actual rent reduction, paying 50%. Now, obviously, that's going to be judged in terms of who the landlord is, your relationship with the landlord. But the key thing there is really to communicate with the landlord and make sure that you can supply some proper commercial financial information as to why you are looking for that for that deferment, or for indeed, obviously paying on a different basis. Rates, I think, have been fairly fully covered, that obviously there is a full freeze on there. And just in case there's any confusion, for smaller businesses paying rental values under £50,000 a year, there are grants available as well. So the position on the rents is good. And on freehold property, I know now many people with freehold property with mortgages have contacted the banks and are getting a fairly positive response on that in terms of being able to have a period of not paying capital repayments and interest. So property, probably the second biggest cost any business has got in this sector after employment. There are a number of things there that clearly can be done to mitigate those costs, to reduce those costs, which at this point in time obviously is absolutely key. There has been the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors have issued on the 19th of March an alert to the effect that the property market is now entering, or was now entering, a period of material uncertainty. And that is obviously going to potentially affect valuations, etc. Now, there's been a lot of talk in the media about what's going to happen to property prices. We really don't know yet, and it would be wrong to make any forecast, particularly on commercial property, as what will happen. But that might be something that is going to be used if there are lease negotiations coming up after this period. So that's really at this stage the update I want to give on the property front. Just talking about cash flow now, that's going to be, I think what I've seen is a lot of businesses over the last couple of weeks have been handling the shutdown and have been really much more involved in the furloughing of employees, stocks, etc., security, insurance. Now it's coming to a point where cash flow is absolutely going to become key. And we're not just talking now about a business looking at a three-month cash flow. We're talking about, particularly with respect to looking at getting bank funding, that needing to be 6 months, 12 months, a cash flow going forecast going forward for a year. Absolutely crucial this is done. And again, giving just a little plug on this one, McIntyre Hudson are developing a tool which will be ready probably this week, which will help in that respect. Because certainly one or two instances I've seen so far of dealers going to banks coming back with lots of different questions, and it hasn't really been approached in a proper manner, an orderly manner. So certainly we can help there if there are businesses out there looking at assisting, needing assistance, either with a model to do their cash flow or indeed more pertinent questions on that. That's going to become absolutely crucial, because it's not just a question of no revenue coming in for the next quarter. As has already been discussed, it's going to be what is going to happen after that in terms of when people do get back to work? What are the strains on cash flow going to be? What's the level of business going to be? So absolutely important. If this hasn't been done already, and I've got to be honest, in a number of people I've talked to, they certainly haven't done it this year yet. We're going to have to look very seriously now at cash flow implications, just not for the next 3 months or so, but really going on for the next 12 months. So I think that really sums up the two key things I want to talk about this morning.
Thanks, John. Does anybody have any questions at this stage for John before we try and go back to Nigel? If you have, just take yourself off mute. Not like me, staying on mute. Okay, is Nigel, are you now on?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you better now. Thanks, Nigel. Over to you. Yeah.
So it's better and worse. You can see and hear me. Okay, so I was just going to do an update on the coronavirus job retention scheme, so the furloughed employee scheme, as we had some significant updates over the weekend. So good of the government to send things out at 9:20 on Saturday morning, just as I was doing the gardening. But it's very useful sort of clarification. And the updates, as they stand, are that employers will need to make sure that they're registered for PAYE online. So that's going to be really important because part of the process when HMRC processed the claim and their portal is not going to be ready until quite late on in April for you to do that. So obviously remember that this is a pay and reclaim scenario. You're going to have salaries that you've paid in March and you'll be more that you'll pay in April. And so there'll be some time before you can get that money back from the government. So need to factor that into cash flow, et cetera, et cetera. But two things they're going to do as a given is they're going to check that the employer is registered online so they can identify it, and also that you processed a payroll at the end of February. And they're going to check that the people on the payroll in February are the same people that are on the claim when you make that through the separate portal. So anybody that wasn't on the payroll on February that you put into your claim, you can expect that element of the furlough grant to be rejected. So make sure that you're registered online just so that they can find you as an employer when you put your claim in, and make sure you've got the right people on the claim when it goes in. They have clarified a few things. Apprentices can be furloughed in the same way as anybody else, but you must have confirm in writing at some point. If you haven't already, then you need to make sure that you've confirmed in writing individually to every worker that you're furloughing that you are furloughing them, and you are required to keep a copy of that correspondence and ideally their signed agreement or email agreement back for 5 years. So that gives us an indication of how long after the event HMRC are going to audit this to check you've done it properly. And maybe to claw back any money that where you haven't followed A, the right procedure, or B, where you've claimed for the wrong people or the wrong amounts. The amount you can claim, so bearing in mind you run payroll separately as normal, and this is a separate process to claim back the furlough grant through a separate portal. But the basis of that claim, you can start to claim from the date the employee actually finished work and went on furlough. So the inference being that it doesn't matter that you haven't necessarily yet written to them or written to them properly, that you can you can do that now retrospectively. The amount that you base it on, so they said for salaried people, it would be based on their salary as at 28th of February. That hasn't changed. They did say that it excluded fees, commissions or bonuses. They're now saying that fees, commission and bonuses that are compulsory, i.e. that are built into your contract and therefore paid regularly, paid every month, can be included in the calculation of the 80% with the £2,500 a month cap. So that's some welcome news. It is still unclear as to whether that's all based on what went through the payroll on February, or whether you can average that over the tax year or by reference to the same period previous year. It's not clear. HMRC and the government aren't clear. Even an update webinar yesterday was not only using some guidance from the 26th of March rather than the 4th of April, so it still said fees and bonuses and commissions couldn't be included, they kind of skipped the answer in relation to salaried people as to whether it's an average over the year or just based on February or something of a hybrid. So we are seeking further clarification on that, which will come through. One thing that I think is slightly disappointing is that they've reconfirmed that apprenticeship levy and student loans will still be due. So employees will still have to pay student loan payments on the amount of furlough pay that goes through the payroll. So that will impact clearly on their take-home pay. And you as an employer will have to pay apprenticeship levy, and the furlough grant only covers you for the gross pay that you put through as furlough pay up to the 2,500 cap, plus the national insurance on that pay that's furloughed, plus the employer's statutory pension, the 3% pension contribution on that. So the maximum you can claim is your 2,500 gross, national insurance on the 2,500, and the 3% on the 2,500. But you still, if that's all you pay people, then therefore that's all you get back from the government, that's great, but there will still be a gap because the 0.5% apprenticeship levy will still be required to be paid. You have to furlough somebody for a minimum of 3 weeks, so they have to be off for three consecutive weeks, but they can be furloughed multiple times. So you can either extend that or bring them back and then furlough them again. But that's obviously each separate instance must be a minimum of three consecutive weeks. So rotation staff is possible under the new guidance. And if your contract allows, employees can, as well as doing voluntary work for you and training for you or voluntary work for anybody else, they can also do paid work for other people if your contract allows them to do that. So they could get furlough pay from you and they could get fully paid for helping to do picking and packing at Tesco's. There are other supermarkets around. So some very welcome news there. And I think a lot of the lobbying that's gone on from various industry bodies has helped, but there's still a few things to clarify. And obviously there's also the whole sort of process to think about. And touching on what John mentioned, we are sort of separately going to produce or we've been asked by several people actually to produce a job retention scheme guidance document, so that covers the outline of the arrangement, what the identification criteria is for employees, what the qualification criteria is for you as a business, what you should communicate, how you should operate payroll, deal with things like sick pay, maternity pay, and then the new portal registration, the ultimate claim, and some things to be mindful of in terms of the HMRC audit and what we expect sort of the criteria and the process to be for that. So lots going on. It is still sort of moving, certainly weekly, if not more regularly than that. But I just wanted to focus, just for the purposes of this call, on what's changed or what's been clarified since we last covered this.
Thanks, Nigel. Any questions from anybody for Nigel? Okay, so I mean, just before we start to come to a close, I think Kate, are you on? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Kay. Welcome. So Kay's obviously joined us from the US. It's fairly early over in the US, so the dogs had a bit of a surprise this morning with Kay getting up really early. I don't know if you've got anything you'd like to share with the attendees, Kay, from obviously with Andy saying that, you know, the US are passing the cold on to everybody else. But have you got anything you'd like to share what's happening over in the US from your perspective?
No, I mean, what seems like we're following pretty much everyone else. The difficulties we have is that because of all the states, they're doing their own thing. So in our business, what I do, we're in 19 different states. We're having to navigate stay-at-home orders are different for every location, and the same for the auctions. So we do have some auctions that are operating because they're considered an essential business because they actually service Amazon. So they're doing work for Amazon, but in the having, you know, the simulcast sales and online sales, But then we have other auctions that are completely shut down. They're not doing any kind of sales. They're accepting vehicles, but that's it. And then we have some independent auctions that are in states that do not have a stay-at-home order. So Oklahoma is, they're not on a stay-at-home order. So they are running sales. They are, you know, operating as normal. So it's really interesting when all of this kind of pans out, what it's all going to look like, from the states that didn't have a stay-at-home orders to the states that are on a hard shutdown. And they're slowly trying to get the auctions into the non-essential or to the essential businesses and try to get some operations going and continue the online sales. The sales that I know that have happened in the last week, their return is about anywhere between 18 to 30%. So it's encouraging that there's dealers out there buying, but we don't know, you know, how long that'll last, and again, where those cars are going to. I don't know where they're being bought from or going to. So, you know, right now, until all of this is over, you know, we are expecting the same as everyone else. You know, the hard recession, how that affected the sales in the automotive, and also a little bit of what happened directly after 9/11 for us when we went on a hard shutdown as well for a week or so. So we're just going through it like everybody else, and hopefully they'll come back. But, you know, President Trump has put us on a national stay-at-home order until the end of the month, but there's some businesses trying to get on before that. So that's really what's going on over here.
Thanks, Kay. And obviously take care over there as well. We've got Jerry Moxon on from Click Dealer. And I think, Jerry, have you got some activity on what you're seeing from a Click Dealer perspective across the dealer sector?
Yeah, hi, Phil. Obviously, Click's only involved in independent used, mostly car, some van. We had about 1,400 customers at the beginning of March. We've now only got something like 1,200 maybe. We've had 200 cancellations already. Our dealers typically were selling between 60 and 70,000 units a month. They'd come off very strong January and February trading, but they've now gone down to, we were doing about 3,000-4,000 units a day going through our platforms. They're now doing 30-40 a day. We believe most of that is because the dealerships are closed and they're catching up on paperwork. So they've gone from generating about 550 to 600 million of retail revenue a month to zero. And obviously that's quite shocking. We're getting a lot of distress calls at the moment. And I guess we're all looking at a crystal ball. I know Andy, and I think having access to that data, Andy, is remarkable. We don't think that automotive retail will come out of shutdown much before the end of June. We also are concerned that automotive retailing, if it's a phased exit out of lockdown, not sure that automotive retailing will be seen as something that's critical. I think the one thing that most of my customers would be concerned about is those who are highly geared on stocking facilities, be them provided by auctions, finance companies, or independent facilities, are quite concerned about what's going to happen. Most of the cars, when they went into lockdown, were probably 40, 50 days old. 3 months of lockdown, 90 days, that takes them into 120, 130-day territory. Not sure what's going to happen on capital repayments. Second thing I think they're mostly concerned about is that if 80% of that used car purchase was supported by finance somewhere along the journey, what's going to be the appetite to lend again to somebody who wants to buy a car? We call them Mr. and Mrs. Necessities. These are people who must change car. We actually estimate that's about 20, 25% of the actual used car marketplace. Let's say that was 8 million units. Well, that might come down to 2 million units if it's only Mr. and Mrs. Necessity. Our own business is planning to have 50 to 60% less dealers by the end of the year because we think a lot will just not be able to cope with the financial pressures that a sustained lockdown has given them. I think it's a time in everybody's business, whether you're a small family business like ours or a large business. It's going to be very different indeed.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks. Appreciated. So as this is a general meeting anyway, does anybody have any general questions for anybody or anything they'd want to add at this point? Okay, so just quickly before we start to bring the webinar to a close, I'd just like to hand over to Sam Watkins, who should be on, who's obviously the chair of the VRA. Just say some words from the chair. Over to you, Sam, if you're there. Hopefully.
Yeah, I'm here. Sam. I'm here. Sorry, I was sitting there just enjoying listening rather than taking part.
Sorry, I caught you out there. Sorry.
Listening, isn't it? I mean, I suppose the only words from me is to, you know, to sit here and listen to what's happening globally is interesting, somewhat depressing. But I know, I think we've all got to face the realities, but I think it is a moving feast. Things are changing on a daily basis. You know, in our business, you know, working in the technical services sector, I'm sure that supports the whole of the, you know, the outward journey into retail. You know, we're as stagnated as the rest, but really focusing on looking at what we can do to make a start when we're able to, and really focusing around how can we do that safely to enable the chain to commence, even if that's in a phased fashion. And it's something that myself and the rest of the board are going to be discussing, looking at how we can support the industry and best practice understanding how we roll out a phased approach to safe processing in our sector, which traditionally uses you know, vast numbers of people in space, you know, in spaces, auction centres, you know, technical services centres. So I think for now we're doing everything we can, like the rest of the sector, just making sure we understand what's happening, but also, you know, trying to look forward and create complex model scenarios that help us deal with, you know, different types of lockdown and a phased approach to return. So I suppose also from me, it's to say, if you've got any expertise in understanding that, then please talk to me, because I'm happy to work, you know, a steering group to try and help us understand that. And then putting that to one side, if there's other things that you feel as members that we should be focusing on, then, you know, please get in touch with us. We want to be here to, you know, serve through a virtual environment your needs during this difficult time.
Thanks, Sam. That leads me just to say that to thank everybody for joining this morning, and we will be in contact again with a future webinar. There's lots to talk about, and as I say, with some of the speakers there, we could have really made this a lot more than an hour. I think it would be good to obviously bring an element of the commercial vehicle market in to one of them on the next webinar as well. So maybe that's a topic worth looking at, obviously, with what's happening in the CV sector, because it is obviously a different recovery for the commercial vehicle sector and what's happening within that market as well. So that only leads me to say that thank you for your time this morning. Hope you found it useful, and please do take care of yourselves over this Easter bank holiday weekend, those that have got the pleasure of having a garden and can enjoy it. And we are very jealous, Keith, of you. You're still sat there on your in the sun there and enjoying it. But have a fantastic weekend. Keep safe, keep well, and we will join you again soon. And thanks for joining this morning.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Philip.
Thanks, Philip.